This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded April 7th, 2015, episode 244, Exponable Electronics on Weed.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Don't get me started.
Dave is pissed. He's pissed.
I am strongly resisting the urge to drop F-bombs everywhere at the moment.
Right, which we usually try not to, but they happen here, yeah, here and there.
Yeah.
Usually I flick on the extreme content or something. Not extreme content. No. What's it called? Whatever. Adult content.
Oh, yeah, the adult content filter switch
on
iTunes. Right. Google. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Dave lost some video footage this morning, which is disruptive. Quite disruptive.
It's unbelievable.
That sucks. Yeah.
And I did it yesterday. I did exactly the same thing yesterday, too.
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing. Well, but it didn't piss me off as much yesterday. Yeah. Because it's the problem with the SD card. I've talked about this before. SD card in the camera, and I lost a bit of footage yesterday on the same teardown that I'm trying to do, and it didn't piss me off nearly much because I thought, oh, okay, yeah, it happened. I didn't lose a huge amount, so I went and reshot. It was, 20, 30 minutes worth of, it wasn't a huge deal. So I just, sucked it up and went on, and then came back this morning and whacked in my SD card and pressed record, and a couple of hours later I went to put in the SD card in the computer. No, nothing's there.
Yep.
It just, those 30 clips I just shot, just gone,
Yeah. I was having that with the KiCad was crashing every time I did a... I think it was just the one build that I had, because I use all these advanced leading edge builds now. And it was crashing every time I did a copper pour.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I mentioned on the show before.
You mentioned on Twitter, I think.
Oh, on Twitter. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, but it was to the point where, you get far enough along in a design where you're kind of on autopilot. The same thing you're doing with your camera, right? It's just like you're on autopilot, you're ready to go.
Yeah, totally.
And then you forget to hit save and you hit fill and you're like, oh no. And it's gone.
And right. I know.
And unless you do regular backups, right? I mean, so if I did an hourly git commit or even just an hourly save or an autosave, I don't know if the new versions have autosave, but unless you get in that habit, which is basically a way of acknowledging that, yes, this is very broken, but I'm using it anyway.
Right.
Unless you have that in your workflow, then you're gonna keep stubbing your toe in that exact same spot and swearing up a storm. I mean, it's terrible. So yeah,
I should give some background on this for those who aren't aware of it. Right, my camera all my cameras use SD cards. Right, and of course I record the footage on the SD cards. I sneak and edit. I take it out. I carry it over to the computer, whack it in, and I copy the files from the SD card. Which is fine and dandy, right? You can copy the files, you can put it in the PC, copy the files, and then go put the, do some editing. Because sometimes I like to do that. I like to, shoot half the video, and then, I might go to lunch, and I go, oh, I'll just edit that video to see where I'm at, So I'll edit the footage I've got now. So I copy over the footage I've got, edit it, and then, after I've done that, I might, I'll go back and take the SD card back, whack it in the camera, and continue the second half of the video, right? And this is normal. This is a normal part of my workflow. The problem is that if you touch any of the files on the SD card, if you delete a video file, if you rename them, if you copy another file on there, if you do anything at all, touch that card, write to it in any way, shape or form, which is normal for Windows and everything else, right? The camera can screw up, not always, but it can completely screw up and refuse to record video to that SD card, even though it's telling you, right? So I can go do a whole day's shoot, and the little red record button comes up, the timer comes up. Yep, I'm recording to the SD card. It appears all normal, and you get back, and it hasn't recorded anything since you last touched those files.
Right. Just and, like a backup isn't really a backup until you try and back it up. Right?
Until
you try and restore it.
And of course, my camera has the dual SD card recording facility, but do I do it? You know, so it actually records a backup to the SD card, but do I do it? You know, no, because I'm probably stupid and because it's an extra step that you shouldn't need, right? You shouldn't need to do
it. It's accepting that you have a broken workflow. Again.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And it's extra work, so I've got to find two SD cards and format them because I've got SD cards coming out my backside with all sorts of weird footage on that I haven't done yet or whatever, you know. And so I've got to find SD cards and whack them in there and clean, you know, erase the files, make sure I've actually copied them, make sure I don't need them anymore, erase them, put them back in, blah, blah. And that's hard enough for one card, let alone two. And it's just, when you do it every day, you know, it's just an extra step you don't want to have to do. Anyway, yeah. For those who think it is just, oh, well, don't use a Canon video camera. Well, it happens on my Sony too. So, you know, like it is, right, it's happened on every, well, it's happened on my two Canon cameras that I've had, the HFG 10 and the HFG 30. It's also happened on my Sony NEX VG 30. So for those who think it's just a Canon issue, it's not. So,
yeah.
And for those who mention it, because everyone does, oh, just use a file recovery tool. No, it doesn't work. And yes, I've tried every freaking one on the market. So it's not that. It just, it's unbelievable. It's just a pain in the ass problem. And,
I hate to, but the I worst hate to, thing is, to tell you how much better I am than you, but I just record straight from my computer now.
Yeah, I know. You've got this weird, fantastic workflow which produces, you know, videos on the fly with no editing at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, so people don't, I started doing it for Contextual Electronics. What the heck is going on? Sorry, something just started singing at me on my computer. What the heck is going on here?
Yeah, I hate that when you have like 20 million tabs open and then something starts autoplaying. Some video starts autoplaying somewhere.
That was Phil Collins started playing at me, apparently.
Right. In the
end. Because why not? Yeah.
Okay.
I can feel it coming in the air.
Drum solo.
That's right. Yeah. I started doing hardware stuff for like camera switching. There's this program called XSplit, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I've used it.
I'll post a link to it. But yeah, it's awesome.
Well, there's nothing.
It's hard, you know, like when you're trying to
great about it. It's just that it has a pause button.
It has
during
a pause
recording.
Button. Yeah.
You know, there's lots of programs that do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know,
you know this, and other people know this from watching your videos and stuff. It's hard to kind of, when you're looking over, to replicate that looking over someone's shoulder, experience, which is kind of what Contextual Electronics is.
Right,
That's kind of tough to do, you know, especially in a quick amount of time. So, video. Mm. It sucks. But it's kind of, it's still the best medium we have, right? Unless, you know, someone can like inhabit my consciousness and believe me, folks, you don't want that.
Yeah.
Don't go there.
And for those who say, well, why don't I just do that and have, you know, live switching and blah, 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 you know, all that sort of jazz. It's just totally not suited to the styles of video that I do. And you may not notice it until you compare two of the same video shot with the two different techniques side by side, and you'll notice that the effort I go to produce my video, you know, every shot is framed, well, almost every shot is framed properly, right? I set the camera, I change lenses for every shot if I've got to do macro things, and, you know, and I'm framing the damn thing. I might set manual focus, manual exposure, all sorts of jazz before I hit that record button. That's why I end up, some videos can have up to 200 clips, you know, because I'm always doing that. But it produces a much better, you know, tightly flowing video at the end of
that
it.
That rambles on for an hour.
Then just, I mean, mine ramble on for an hour, but there's no wasted...
Imagine how good it looks.
Imagine how good it looks and framing. And you don't notice that until you see the two videos, you know, until you did a, you know, A-B comparison kind of thing.
So me and Dave will do a video off at some point in the future.
So it works great for the style of video you do. And if I was doing a live show, I would have the same setup. In fact, I want to set up my live rig again And that's the plan. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to have all the multiple camera angles and we can flick through them and all that sort of stuff. But then again, it's different once again if you've got a live audience watching at the same time.
True.
See?
True.
Because then there's no point using the pause button. Key. Right?
No pause key.
Exactly. So, So you need the right tool for the job. You need the right setup for the job. The right optimized setup can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Yep.
Man.
So I was thinking about topics for the show today, and I was playing my piano. I have a new piano. I don't know if I mentioned on the show.
Sold all your other ones, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. And this is actually, so it's like a sampling piano, right? And don't worry, folks, I'm getting to the point here. But what it was is like, so I had like all these analog pianos and all these beautiful pieces of old gear and stuff like that. And I'm playing this new piano and like everything about it is amazing, right? It's a sampling piano. So it's not like, you know, like purists out there will be like, oh, well, you can't do this and that and this and that. But like, honestly, it has everything, you know, like it don't need anything else, right? And it kind of felt like...
Yeah, but didn't they have these like 20 years ago? These sampling keyboards with everything?
They did, yeah. You know, they did. And like...
So what's different with a modern one?
Just like the depth of like how much they consider in the actual sampling. So they like sample the sound of you releasing the foot pedal. Like,
right.
So it's just kind of like taken to another level. And it's not like the best thing ever, but it's just, you know, for me, it's just this next echelon. And you know, we're kind of seeing the same... And it's also got like it models all of the classic sounds that I like. Okay. But the idea is that it's consolidate all of these old, you know, I kind of think about it in terms of like test equipment, right? There's like, so like looking at like, you know, like that, this MDO-3000 that you and I both have and stuff like that. And other gear that's out there, like everybody's just consolidating, right? It's just like, you just keep pouring more and more features into something. And what that ends up with is it's just, there's not as much, interesting individual problems. Like there, you know, you could still go back and play with the, you know, the old analog piano, and you can optimize it and you can rework it and you can try new things on there. But I just thought it was interesting from a, like trying, like it kind of makes the landscape more boring. And that's what I've been struggling with lately. Like some of it's just like, I'm kind of bored with electronics and people, I know I probably shouldn't say that on a show about electronics, but like it kind of feels
understand, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just like everything's getting so consolidated that it's like, you know, like I find interesting problems here and there to work on, and I think that's a lot of stuff I'm doing in contextual electronics, but like it just feels like everything is in everything, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, well, here's this new micro, but it also has Bluetooth and it also has a power, you know, power stuff integrated. And it's just like, well, what the hell, man? Like, where's the fun? And to be fair, the fun part is in, you know, the coding and the implementation of it. But like, that's not as fun for me. You know what I mean? Like, that's not the hard part for,
for me, the fun part is still the product design, you know, like it's not in the electronics as such, you know. Yeah, I can get a micro, I can whack it on, I can choose an ADC and whack it on, I can choose some op amps and whack them on, I can do a power supply and whack it on, you know, but you know, I've done all that stuff before, you know. It's not that exciting.
Whereas right, but it feels like these days, there's such a push towards like smaller and lower cost and lower power, so it's not like there's, you know, 15 sub-circuits anymore either. It's like micro, like I got a teensy, right? I got a teensy, the 3.1, and this thing is, you know, it's gorgeous. This little board is probably what, like an inch by a half inch,
yeah.
And you know, it's got a Cortex something something from Freescale, and you know, power and a little, you know, a USB serial. You know, it's just like similar to Arduino type style. But I mean, like, what else do you need? These days, like, there's like, this thing does a crap ton. Like, it has audio libraries on it and it does all these other,
right.
Like, it's just like, it's crazy, you know? And it's, I know that I should be amazed by it, but I feel dismayed by it. You know, like, it's just, I don't know why. I don't know what it is. Other people feel this, maybe they don't, like, but.
Well, you know, we're electronics designers, right? That's what we've always done in industry, right? And it's, yeah, it's just blasé to us, I guess. It's just, you know,
yeah, I guess. I mean, like, well, and I've said it before too, and it's like obviously it contrasts with my other job, which is like building a site for shopping for parts, right? And I feel like that is a big part of our, as electronics designers these days, it's about who's good at shopping and finding good parts for an application. You know, it's always been about that, but now it's so much more about that, you know, finding the right parts, finding the parts that you can actually buy and, you know, actually use and, you know, like get on time, stuff like, you know, stuff that we've talked about on the show before. But also, like, that takes so much fun out of it, you know? It's not like, it's not just transistor design or, you know, like, I don't know. And it's not like we can't do that either, right? I mean, like, so, like, that is still part of the, I think that might also be part of the problem of where I am personally in my career. Like, not that I've done so much, but just that...
He's going through a mid-career crisis, folks.
I think I might be. Yeah, no, it's just like, looking back, right? So like all this stuff with the art of electronics coming out again, right? And it's just like, going through it again. I've done that. You know, I've gone through so much of it. And like, I know there's new stuff, but like... And I get that I should do that, and I'll find stuff from doing a lot of that stuff. And like, even just... Okay, again, from the piano thing, I was playing my piano thinking about it, and like... So much of learning electronics in the first place is about, you know, just kind of not even gritting your teeth, but just not saying I need to invent something new and fantastic, but just to do what other people have done, right? Just to learn the methods and to see the patterns, you know, like me playing songs that other people have written, right, on my piano. Like that's the same thing electronics, where you go through and you're designing stuff, maybe you're using app notes, stuff like that. Like all of these things are still important and they're still interesting to me, and there's still challenges with them. And yet, I don't know. Like I think you're right. I think it's just the mid-career doldrums. I think also because I don't have like a, you know, like I'm not working towards like a deadline product.
Exactly. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
And people say, yeah, why can't I develop products like I did in industry? Well, because there's no one whipping my ass. You know, there's no deadline. I'm not being paid to do it kind of thing. Oh, but you are. You get video. No, it's not the same. It's not the same.
Well, yeah, and I think, I mean, like, and I think that a lot of the projects I've been doing a lot of projects, right? So I got two boards in on Contextual Electronics since it's started back up, but,
yep,
you know, like, there's still that, I want something, I feel like there's something around the corner, you know, like, there's something I should be doing, there's some kind of technology I should be discussing, like, all this crap about batteries, too, like, I feel like there's something I should do there, but I, like, you know what I mean? Like, I know. Oh, I'm telling myself, oh, you should be Tony Stark, but I am not Tony Stark. You know what I mean? Like,
you think?
I am not that person. No, but I mean, like, there's all these problems that are out there that we should be solving, and we should be working on, and I just don't know where to go next. You know, that's kind of a.
Yep.
I have a lot of things to do. Don't get me wrong, but I just
and
I don't know.
That's also the problem. You know, how do you commit to something? You know?
Right. That's a good question. I guess you
just
start.
I don't have
start.
The answer, so right, no, you just damn. Start and then finish with your half-assed finished project, and then you move on to the next one when you know.
I think that actually, no, that does bring up a good point, like having a economic goal, right? I mean, having that, like, that hunger based on actual, you know, like if your economic future is dependent on it, right? You'll do interesting stuff in that case. I don't know, though, man. I don't know.
The hunger's gone, huh?
It's not gone. Well, that's the thing. Like, I'm building projects. I'm interested in this stuff. I have people that I'm working with and teaching and, like, all of this stuff. It's still there. But I don't know. Maybe... But it just... what it is a feeling about industry these days. You know, like, about specifically, like, this hardware ecosystem. Like, all of the changes to the hardware side of things, too. Like, everybody's pushing, well, you got to get a... app out there, and it has to talk to a piece of hardware, and it's just like, I don't care, like, you know, like,
exactly.
So many of these things, like, I read about these, like, oh god, the demo day startups. Did we talk about that last week or 2 weeks ago? Or
no, demo day startup, no.
So Y Combinator, right? That's this startup accelerator thingy dingy, and like. So they you know, they have a demo day where all these investors show up and
And it's like a pitch day, is it?
Right. Yeah. And you know, like all of these, just reading the list of all these startups, and it's just like, not all of them are hardware, obviously, but like so many of them are just like, what? Why?
I know.
And it's not like that hasn't happened in the past too, you know, like there's always been, you know, oh, social network yeah, yeah, for yeah. turtles and yada yada, you know, like stupid shit like that. But like I don't know. I just
You shatterer of dreams, you.
I think I'm an old codger, Dave. I think
I know. I think welcome to the club.
5 years in, you've gotten to
no,
me.
I've gotten you. Yep. Got him.
I'm toast.
Yes. So,
I know. Well, and like all this, like and like Internet of Things, and everything has Wi-Fi, and everything has Wi-Fi, and everything has Bluetooth, and I don't know how to do any of it.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's the thing. I'm developing a product at the moment, and it's going to have Bluetooth. You know.
Yeah.
And I can't say what it is, but you know.
Oh, yeah. And everybody has secrets. What the hell?
There are people who know what it is. My supporters know what it is. Okay. But yeah, it's not public yet, because if it goes public, like there'll be so many people with so many opinions. It'll be the it'll be right. the micro supply all over again, you know.
Right.
But 10 times well, worse, you know.
I can't fault you
do
for...
Do it this way. It's got to have this feature. It's got to have that. What yeah, the hell right. are you doing that for? Oh, it's got to meet this price point. It's got to meet that price point. Anyway, it's going to be like a year-long project. And it's not just me. I'm partnering up with a professional manufacturing company
cool.
doing this thing. So, yeah, it's early stages yet. I've just gotten my concept prototype. You know, they did a proposal for me, you know. So I sort of gave them some, you know...
Like early quotes and stuff like that?
Yeah. Well, it isn't even a quote yet. It's just like, oh, here's what it's going to look like. Here's how it's going to work. You know, this is the features it's going to have, blah, blah, blah. You know, so.
That's what, you were saying that or they were saying that?
No, they're saying that. That was part of their proposal. I went to them and say, hey, I want one of these things. And let's work together to design and build one of these things for me. And
cool. So you're kind of like the investor / management guy now versus just the straight design guy?
Oh, yeah. I won't be like, oh, yeah, I won't be designing this thing because this company specializes in making this product,
thing.
Right?
I'll be
having a hand in it.
Right,
but it's not like I'm going to be laying out the ball.
No. This is interesting. Like, Dave, the manager. I like this. This is like now Dave has all the rants from the other side. Obviously, Dave has an employee now, and he also has a product under his care now. I don't know. You've got profit and loss statements now. Dave Corp the machine is in full swing.
That's it. So yeah,
oh,
I'm,
that's exciting.
And this could cost a serious amount of money, you know. Like I've got to commit to, you know, a certain number of these things, and you know, there's the development, and that's all to be discussed. You know exactly how much it's going to cost, but yeah, I need to commit big time to it. You know, so it'll be a proper professional mainstream product. You know,
so are you,
as people are used to?
I'm loath to ask, but are you? Are you going to take on outside investment? Talking about startups?
Nope.
Okay.
Like when it gets towards the end, I might do the crowdfunding thing just to, as a
oh,
like a
yeah.
pre,
well, that's
as
though,
as a
yeah.
as a pre-sales kind of thing. But no, this will be my risk. This will be my risk.
Yeah. Up front. That's good. That's good.
So, yep. Anyway, hopefully I'll have stories to tell over the coming year about this sort of thing, but yeah.
Good.
You know, I can tell you, like, I gave them some specs, right? They're very top-level kind of stuff. And they came back with this proposal. I'm going, like, some aspects of them going, that just doesn't make sense. You know, like, why have you specified that? Like, that's just, it just doesn't make sense.
Oh, so now you're
going to
be, like, the micromanager and, like, I'll just do it myself.
Right, yeah, something like that. So, yeah. You know, I've got to steer it, because if I just said, yeah, that's fine, and they went off, it'd be a disaster of a product, you know. It'd be awful. So, yeah, I've got to, you know, rein it in and go, hey, no, that's just silly, you know. We can't go down that path. We can't use that type of thing, you know.
Thing.
No. Thing.
That thing.
That thing.
That widget. You know? That color of widget that doohickey
and
that goes on the thing.
And there'll be a ton of compromises, because you know people expect this product because it's come from me and I've got such a and so many opinions about these sort of things, you know, and they'll expect it to be perfect, and it won't be, you know. That's the shitty thing. There's always compromises, you know.
Yeah. It's product design, right? I mean, like, that's the thing. I think a lot of the engineering side of things too, we're always, well, not always, but some of that stuff gets shielded, right? In a good organization, that stuff gets shielded, you know, because marketing groups will ask for the moon in hoping that they'll get some portion of it, right? And a lot of time
sometimes you have to produce the moon for them, even though it's absolutely ridiculous and it's going to kill the product. You know, it might get it to market, but it might be a complete joke because you included the moon. You know, like, it might be a complete failure, but that's what you were tasked with doing, you know, and yeah. The perils of being engineer. I've said it before.
You don't want to, like, have a, you know, you don't want your product to fail in the market, but nobody wants their product to fail in the market.
But if
you're just doing what you were asked, and sometimes that is the downfall. And if there's
And I've worked at companies like that, and we've discussed it before, I'm sure, where I've been working on a product and I'm going, this is stupid. This is the dumbest idea ever. It's never going to work. And of course it doesn't work, you know, and you know, you try and tell them and they go, shut up, do it or leave. You know, and
well, you do say, like, that kind of more often than you probably should, though. You do say things won't work very often.
So there is a balance point
there, I think, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, sure enough, you're right. And, you know, it's as plain as day to anyone who has any clue. But, of course, management often don't have a clue. You know, they got, you know, their head in the clouds and, yep, what can you do, right?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
It's a job. So you go, okay, well, yeah, fine. You know, you try and score little wins. You know, they're the kind of stuff that makes it interesting. You know, sometimes you can go, you know, look, you really argue for something. Look, we really should put this in here, you know, and it's just, yeah, and they finally agree to it. And you go, yes, you know, small little win. You know, even though their product overall is going to completely fail, at least you knew that you put
extra
in something
resistor,
that would
that
be
was
good.
Me.
Exactly. That's right.
9.1K instead of a 10K. I showed you bastards. So actually, we had a question on Twitter Sam asked about project worthiness, and he said, when's it worth taking a project to the next level? Oh. And I think that's an interesting question in terms of you, because
which level, from what level to what level are we talking about?
He said, from napkin to bench to prototype to macrofab to Kickstarter to big money. And I think that's actually an interesting question, because a lot of time, like, if a lot of the hardware stuff that I've worked on in the past always has these, like, these big gate reviews, and, you know, there's always the marketers have these big pile of requirements, and the engineers say, well, here's where we are with this. And, you know, there's like a formalized process around it. And usually it's a lot of dog and pony show, but there probably is some actual, you know, like, it's all based probably around good theory. So the question is, do you plan to do that kind of thing with your product? And, have you seen it work or not work?
Oh, this is a difficult question. The reasons for going to the next level, it's going to vary totally. Depends on who you are and what your goals are. Is your goal to form a company, as a lot of people coming out, you know, a lot of kids coming out, I want to have my own company. It doesn't matter. Let's just brainstorm a product idea and run with it, because the whole goal is to do a startup, you know, and maybe get rich, you know. Like,
fail fast.
Or is your goal, you know, like, I'm so passionate about, you know, this particular topic, and I'm going to develop this product, and I don't care if anyone buys it. I just want to do this, you know, because it's my passion. Or is your goal to, you know, start not the startup culture, but I just want to have a nice range of test gear or something. So I'm going to develop some nice test gear and form a company to do it, and blah, 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 you know. And, like, when you actually care about the product, but, you know, so there's lots of, I don't know, which camp do you want to, discuss?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think these days it's like, of the things he listed, he said napkin to bench to prototype to macrofab to Kickstarter, right? So macrofab we had on last week. I mean, I think so much of that stuff is cheap these days, and even Kickstarter,
I'll tell you what, if you're going to macrofab, you don't need your Kickstarter. Why do you need your Kickstarter?
Yeah, yeah.
You've already got.
You need it for a prototype, maybe.
You need it. what you need Kickstarter for is for the publicity, right? It's a publicity machine, right?
Yeah.
You don't need it because you need the money. When you're going to MacroFab, you can whack out your prototypes for, you know, like a few hundred dollars, and you've got yourself, you know, you've finished working sort of, you know, prototypes. Like, anyone who can't cough up that sort of money themselves shouldn't be doing it, right?
Yeah, you're probably not in electronics anyways, to be honest. I mean, like, a lot of the struggles with people getting started in electronics anyways, it's like, I don't know, $500 minimum to get started, you know?
This is what pisses me off, you know, people who do a Kickstarter and they haven't produced a prototype, you know, oh, God, they go to Indiegogo because they haven't produced a prototype. It's like, why haven't you? Why haven't you, because they want the Indiegogo money to produce the prototype. It's no, piss off. Go and spend your own money and produce the prototype.
Make it out of cardboard if you need to.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that just pisses me off every time. Get angry at people who do that, you know? It's just, God. Yep.
Especially
hardware that is, you know, you can spend a little bit of money and get prototypes. You know, the world we live in now, you can get your $5 prototype PCBs. You can buy parts in one-off from DigiKey, any part you can possibly imagine. It's possible to build low-cost prototypes, right?
Yeah, and your prototype might be $300, but you might be a $30, you know, end product board at least, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, and then that's when you go to the next level.
Yeah.
So if he's talking about going to the macro fab thing,
asking general, right. Generally, but
Jeez, I don't know.
I think about a lot of this stuff though too. Like so much more of it. Like the stuff that we talk about, electronics wise, like that's not a company. Like a piece of, you know, a PCB is not a company. It's not a product. It's, you know, maybe a project that other people want to buy and it can be bigger. Right. But, you know, there's a lot of other crap in there. There's all the other, you know, case and packaging and marketing BS that's in there. Right. And I think that's the real question is, do you want to deal, like, because I think that, you know, if you look at other people that have done this, you don't do electronics most of the time. Right. I mean, I think this is the struggle that a lot of this stuff is like, if you want to be an electronics person, go be an electronics person, right? Go be a consultant, go hire yourself out, you know, start finding clients and then find the hardware startups that have no clue what they're doing and tell them what to do for lots of money. You know, like, that's what you're going to be doing if you want to do electronics, I think. And you know, the whole lots of money might not show up, you know, that depends how good you are and how many people you know. But I think that's the decision you have to make is, are you willing to never work on electronics again? If you really want to start a company and do that stupid startup stuff and I've talked about it too.
You end up becoming a business person, and you know, I'm already like a business person. That's what I'm doing, you know. I hardly do any electronics design, you know. It's all just the business side
of things. That's right, folks. And never thought you'd see it. Chris does more electronics design than Dave does. And
no surprise there.
Yeah.
goodness gracious. Yeah, because you're in the business of teaching it. That's a different thing. Whereas I'm not, you know, I'm not doing that. I'm not running a course. You know, you've got to practically demonstrate it, you know, and that's forcing you. If you weren't doing that, would you be working on designs?
Probably not. Nope.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like,
exactly.
Unless I went back in the industry and get a job, right? I mean, like, I think that. Yeah, otherwise, I mean...
You would have the odd hobby project on the side, right, which you dabble in every now and then, but end up like me, yeah.
Oh, no, I think that's probably the best part about Contextual Electronics starting back up is that it's just about having, like, an end goal in mind. Like, even though the project we're working on is silly, like, it's just having a project in mind
is so
important. Like, you need to work towards something, and then all of the... I don't know. Like, I think that could be, you know, I think that's good for like, and like, you know, so like Hackaday Prize, stuff like that. Like one of the hard parts about it, like it's good that there's like a theme, you know, more of a theme this year of like fix the world. And then there's that list that we talked about a couple weeks ago of, you know, things that you could do and you could pick one of those out. But like, even still, you need to have a thing, like the idea you're working towards, because then you start because then it becomes a problem of constraints. Right. And this is a problem that I run into all the time when you don't have like monetary constraints, when you have like soft constraints, it's actually much harder to find parts and to like make engineering decisions when you don't have like someone else setting the constraints for you, right?
Yeah,
your product
exactly.
must cost $20. It must fit in, you know, like a 10 square centimeters. It must use less than, you know, 30 milliamps quiescent. Like all, I guess that's a lot, but all of these things, you know, like they, you know, like these are what define your decisions as you step through the project. Then you go back and you compare against. And if you don't have those at the beginning, you're like, eh, I guess it can be, you know, it could use an amp in a resting state.
Hardware designers are much more efficient when they have focused, fixed goals. They're much more efficient.
We've
talked about it on
contest.
Here before. You know, like, we need this product finished before the trade show on X date. And it's like you get it done with 10 minutes to spare. You finish it as the trade show doors are open. Yeah. And how do we do that? It's because, well, engineers are very good and very efficient when they're focused like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're just running your own hobby project, that's, you know, there's zero focus like that.
Yeah.
And back to the question you asked with the product I'm developing, you know, the goal, the why am I doing it kind of thing. Is that what you asked?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, there's several reasons here. One, I've always wanted a product with my face on it, right?
One of these things.
Right, yeah, I've always wanted, you know, my own, right? Always wanted. So that's, you know.
It's a legacy,
so
that's a legacy thing, right? That's a...
it's just a, you know, a fantasy since
thing.
I was a kid, right? Maybe
ego.
I don't know. It's just, you know, I just think it'd be
okay.
Cool.
Hey, I think ego's right? okay, man. Like, honestly.
It is, totally, right? But I don't, that's not the right word. It's just, I think it's cool and I want one. Right? I want my own that I specified.
So it's a scratch your own itch kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
With your face on it. You want to scratch your own itch with your face.
That's it. Anyway, so there's that aspect to it. And there's the business side of things. Like, I know I can't always rely on the advertising income. So I want to, you know, more. I want to develop more products that I can sell. Right, so that I have a second income stream there apart from the ad revenue, which is basically the only place, well, apart from the microcurrent, right? If you said I didn't have the microcurrent, all of my revenue comes from advertising, all of it, right? That's how I feed my family, you know, and that's, subject to the whims of advertisers, right? And so, want to, expand on that. So, you know, I've got the microcurrent, but, you know, with the new employer, I want him to start designing some products that have been on my back burner because I've been too, you know, haven't had the time or the, you know, inclination to go ahead and finish them off. So, you know, that's part of his job. And this is just another thing. Yeah, it'll be another unique thing that I can have in my, portfolio of products I can sell, you know, because I don't want to just, like, I've got the audience to, like, set up a shop and I could probably do quite well, right, and just, like, reselling stuff. Right? Be like an Artifruit kind of reseller, right? You know, small fry kind of reseller. I could do that, but that doesn't interest me. I don't want to do that.
The SparkFunds and the Adafruits, the thing they do really well is the supporting content. And I'm guessing that's actually the interesting stuff, maybe the manufacturing side that they do as well. But like
they
the actual being a sales
logistics
channel.
And the information channel behind all that. But I just don't want to become yet another
being like a fulfillment house is boring. That's really boring.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I just
even
I
if you're good
don't
at
want
it,
to
it's,
do it. So I could start a company, right? If I had any sort of, you know, business nous, right? I'd capitalize on my success, right, with my large audience and go high, you know, go actually put some decent money behind it, maybe even get some investment and go probably not investment, but I would spend my own money, right? I would or borrow some money and I'd go start up a business with, you know, a good chance of it, you know, a distribution business or whatever with a good chance of being successful. I'd hire someone to manage it and all that sort of stuff and just, you know, take an income stream off that. But I don't want to do that. That's just, that just doesn't interest me in the least. So, you know, if I'm gonna have a shop, which I do, right, have one product, I want to sell products that are unique to me, right? I just don't want to resell stuff.
I think that's probably the only way forward. And I think that's part of what's adding to a lot of my, like, feelings these days, too, right? Because everything feels like it's the same. Everything's like a rebadge of things. You know, you see, like, all of these media sources shutting down. You see these companies shutting down just because, like, because the internet allows for basically one winner in each space, right? There is one Amazon, there is one Google, there is one EEV blog. And like, because of that, like, you kind of have to have that, you have to be that, that one thing, you know, and just be really good at that one thing, I think.
And however also the distribution is a race to the bottom. You know, you've got to compete.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff sucks.
You know, you've got to compete. Right. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's crazy. Okay, I make my 10% on this sale. You know, whoop-de-doo. Well, the another guy comes along, he sells it, he's happy with a 5% margin. You're screwed. You know, everyone's going to buy from there. And it's just, cutthroat race to the bottom. You know, but we see your this Spark funds and your Adafruits can be successful. And, you know, there's other
players because of the other stuff they do. Yeah. But I mean, we see this too.
Yeah, it's the other stuff they do. They value add and all that sort of jazz. Yeah. You know.
Well, I mean, we see this in the chip industry though too, right? I mean, so like all of these chip companies are all buying each other just because that same thing. Like, there's less and less margin for each chip because they keep, you know, everybody says, well, we got to make more stuff next year because the industry keeps getting bigger and we'll sell more and we'll keep making more money. And everybody does that. But then eventually the small guys can't compete and the big guys eat the little guys. And now, you know, I don't know how many chip companies we have left, but it sure as hell doesn't feel like many. You know,
no,
like,
I know. They're just merging like this. You know, I didn't think there were that many that these mergers keep happening. Go, oh, yeah, right. I completely forgot about them. Okay, they're merging. Right.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah,
right.
It's like...
So I'm in the midst of picking out a microcontroller as well, like just for my latest project, and it feels like it shouldn't be ARM
or is it an 8-bit?
No, it's gonna be bigger than that. I mean, at least 32-bit, but
don't know like, whether or not you're even gonna go for ARM.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, like, but it feels like. It feels like at the same time there's so much choice and there's no choice, right? It's like you look at all these things and you're like, these all look the same to me. You know, like, how can you really compare all of these different platforms? Yeah. And honestly, what I'm looking at is actually the usability side of things, right? That's kind of where the differentiation point for me is like, so I started looking at Embed and I started looking at all the different compilers and the different IDs that are out there. You know, because I also don't want to just use Arduino. Like, I want to try something different. I want to actually, you know, be coding in C, stuff like that. Stuff that's still challenging, but, you know, like, how do you decide on a micro? I think that we've talked about on the show before. Most people, when they pick a micro, they're like, well, what did I use last time?
Well, it's either what did I use last time because I'm familiar with the tools, or in a lot of my case, it'll come down to component. Cost, okay, versus features, okay, which one? Like, just in my micro supply project, I've actually swapped back and forth between PIC and Atmel several times, right?
Oh, really?
Because I go, oh, okay, this one needs X, you know, I want to get my price, you know, I want to get my cost down, but, oh, the Atmel one, it's just like a general purpose one. Oh, look, Microchip have this really nice targeted one that just has the features I want, and it's 50 cents cheaper, you know, so I'll switch back. You know, just because of that.
And there's a huge switching cost. And this is all before you go to the market, right? I mean, is your supply out? No. Yes, no. No.
No.
It's not out?
No.
Right.
No,
so if you did, once you're in the market, though, then you're done, right? So you're also trying to pick something that, like, when you're, you know, 5 years down the road, you can't switch it, right? Because there's tons in the field. You got to support everything. You know, it's like, that is your child in the marketplace. You don't get to swap again. And actually, so there was an article in, I think it was Jack Gansel's newsletter about, so I mentioned Embed, like I was looking at that because that's interesting and it's kind of, there's a lot of people interested in doing that stuff right now, but that's an online compiler, right? And then like, you think about like long-term support there too, and this is what the people wrote about, it's like, you can't count on it, right? Like,
no,
all you can really count on,
totally.
Like, you can count on GCC, right? And you can count on,
yeah,
like,
of course,
you know, like something
the,
that's been around for 20 years.
The file's always going to be there. I can still download the compiler for my source code from 25 years ago, right? For some program I wrote, right? I can just download it and run it, and it recompiles. No problem.
Right. But that's never going to go on an ARM, right? It's like, all of these things. These are the trade-offs we have to make these days. Like, you're never going to be able to make that different. That, like, if you want something that's leading edge, I mean, this happens in components as well, right? You get a component like a new A to D, or even like a, you know, micro with a A to D and a Bluetooth chip and everything like that. They have footprints that are just like, it's just them, you know, like. T TI owns that footprint or Microchip owns that footprint type, right? There is right. no drop-in replacement because no one's literally allowed to use that footprint, right? And it's like, yeah, you pick and you got to go, you know, like that's why like all this, it feels like it's getting easier, but at the same time, it feels like it's not, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like there's a lot more loaded into single decisions instead of a lot of small decisions. It's like a couple big decisions. And
got it.
It sucks.
It does.
Yeah.
Should we get onto like a list? People complained last time that we didn't cover anything on the list.
Calm down, folks. Calm down. How many 244 episodes? You can go back and listen to one or two. I know we talked about Arduino way too long. Blame Dave.
Yep, we did, and I wasn't the least bit coherent, and you know. Yep.
Whatever.
Yeah.
One thing. Exactly. I actually got to see another mill. So we've talked about a lot about the board etching stuff like that in the past. So I was at a talk that Mike SD from Other Mill gave, and I actually got to see one operating and stuff like that. And that's a pretty cool little piece of equipment. So
this is the PCB at milling.
Milling machine, yeah. Yep. So, and actually the thing, again, kind of talking about the workflow stuff there, that is actually where I think they are doing the best, like, because that's the hardest part, right? Like being able to snap something on and not go and, like, I have a milling machine, right? And I've never used it for milling PCBs because the workflow, I've tried it once.
Yeah, the workflow's awful. Yeah, exactly.
The workflow's awful, yeah. And like, that's where, that's fantastic.
You could do it if you had to, you know, but, like, just to get it working would be...
Yeah.
Yep.
Nightmare. The other one that I'm excited about with that, and I think that might even beat out the other mill, but it's not out yet, is the Carbide 3D, which I think we've mentioned on here before.
Right.
But... I haven't seen them yet, so I've only seen it at trade shows, so we'll see.
But once again, as I said before, this is a technology which is a niche thing prototype PCBs are so cheap and high quality.
Right,
it's just insane to try and compete with that with a do-it-yourself.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I don't know about your workflow, but like, especially when you're doing like prototyping. So the way that we're doing contextual electronics is like, we do little boards, but like, while one little board is out at fab, we're building another one. And then while that, you know, like we're always in just kind of a cycle, like you're always doing that anyways.
Sometimes I'll do that, but often I want it now. So I'm going to hack it together on some sort of proto board, you know, dead bug style or, you know, point to point.
And I mean, there's some stuff that you can't do direct onto copper like that, but then you can get like those, you know, if you have a pile of little breakout boards, or, you know, if you buy them or you make them and then you kind of, you just have them on hand for soldering, that kind of stuff. And
I do that as well. I'll just do it on a breadboard, you know, because I've got some little SO adapters, you know, so I'll whack them on there and... Yeah.
Right, and if people say, oh, well, you can't do it for super high speed, but it's like, you know, you can't go point to point with a lot of high speed stuff anyways, just because of the, you know, the rise times and stuff like that. You'll start to have noise issues and weird stuff happening like that, so you can't really do that anyways. So you're stuck with making a board, and if it's small enough, you're not going to be, you know, using one of those board cutters anyways, so you're kind of screwed either way.
And often I just want to prototype a part of the circuit. I don't want to prototype the whole thing. You know, because I'm just concerned about one little part, whether or not, you know, I'm going to have to tweak it, whether or not it's going to work properly, it's going to be stable or whatever. So I'll breadboard that up and just play around with that, or I'll hack it and prototype it together, play around with that. Yeah, I don't want to lay out a board to do that. Yeah. You know, what a pain in the ass, right? I want to lay out a board for my finished product, or, you know, have a shot at my finished product. Right. Even though I'm probably not going to get the first go, at least want to have a shot. But I don't want to experiment with, you know, something that I'm not sure about. So I'll build up that little part and just hack it together any way I can, just to get some confidence. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's about getting to the point where you feel like you should spend the time on a layout and do that point, you know, that you're that you can get the parts and that they'll work and stuff like that. That's fun.
So it's not often that I'll lay out a board just to test a little aspect of a circuit I wanted to do. Usually it's just hacking.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and a lot of the time these days too, I mean, like so many of the dev kits that are out there, like so many of those, you know, like the, in a part family, there might be 10 parts in a family and there's only one part that has a dev board, but so much of the functionality you can get just from that one dev board, and then, you know, right, change the footprint or whatever you need to in order to get your application.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So, that's what we do.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Art of Electronics. You have an Art of Electronics 3.
Art of Electronics. I have not read it yet, folks. Okay. So sorry, I can't comment on it.
I have not got it yet. I haven't even ordered it yet. I probably will be shunned for that.
Seriously, if you like the second one, get the third one. Like, it's a no-brainer. Just go get it, right?
Seriously. How much is different? I mean, that's the part I
don't know yet. I've got to go through. I've got to spend hours and hours, days and days, probably like flicking through, knowing what's changed and what hasn't.
Yeah.
Yes, they've left some chapters out that are in. We
talked about that, right? You said that Wynn had posted about some of the stuff that's different, but.
And he's and the X chapters hasn't come out yet. There's some complaints that, you know, in the book it says, "Oh, go see the X chapters book for more details." You know, these X chapters are supposed to be like more, they
it's
treat it more in depth. No, it treats a subject more in depth, right? Because the Art of Electronics is not an in-depth book.
No.
If you're after in-depth theory, it's the wrong book for you, right? If you're doing an in-depth theory course on you know, op amps, it is not, you know, on the internal architecture of op amps, it is not the book for you. Right? Yep. It is, you know, a high-level, practical kind of book that covers things in, you know, practical, high-level detail. It's
about
not
getting
a theory
the feel and the, and like the, getting like the mental models that you need. That's what it's really good about.
Yes, that's right. So it's, you know, if you're doing a hardcore engineering course and you think this is the textbook for you, no, it's not. Right. I mean, you know, get the book, textbook that they subscribe, you know, is it Serrata and Smith or is it, you know, whoever, what are the other common ones, you know, they go into much more detail.
Oh, so you're saying if you want like the math, like the heavy math
and
stuff.
The theory and the, you know, and the plots and, you know, and everything else, you know, like it's.
Yeah, there's a
like
range of books out there. I posted actually a picture of my bookshelf for someone earlier today on Twitter.
Oh, right.
But
okay.
Just kind of like, I thought it was fun, actually. Maybe people could do this as well, just kind of, because it's nice to see what, like, other people have posted theirs as well, just to see what other people have, because it's like, oh shit, I want to have that one, you know, like kind of just looking at titles and like looking at my own shelf, even like, you know, like some of them are really practical ones, like Art Electronics and that that Dobkin and Jim Williams one, the Analog Circuit Design, which was a refactoring of a lot of like app notes, stuff like that. But then like, yeah, I mean, I've got some DSP books on there that are just like math.
Yeah, exactly, because you had to buy them as part of your course, you know. There's lots of ones I had to buy as part of the course, because that's what they, you know, like you. Right. It's hard to do the course without getting the prescribed textbook, and it's just awful. You know, it's a book I never go back and reference because it was just it was just so horribly awful into the in-depth theory and just didn't explain things the way I wanted them explained and you know, or I felt comfortable with or whatever. So
we're practical electronics people. Whereas
we're
a lot some people are
they're the
theory. Math
people. No, if you're into IC circuit design or something, you know, the Art of Electronics is useless to you, you know, like it just isn't the book for you. If you're into, you know, really, you know, discrete audio op amp discrete transistor RF design or something, you know, something really heavy duty, you know, it's just not the book for you. It's
But the nice thing is there's a crap ton of books out there that could be. And that's
what this could be good for is sharing
bookshelves, is, you know.
So everyone's got their favorite book for everything. But, you know, the Art of Electronics, I like it as a go-to thing because I haven't, you know, if there's something like a practical circuit that I might vaguely remember from, you know, when I studied it, you know, 25 years ago, right? I'll vaguely remember it and go, but I have no idea, right? Like, my memory's not that great, right? So I just go grab the Art of Electronics, and sure enough, it's in there and how to practically implement it. And I go, yep, good enough. That's what I need.
Yeah, you know? That'll get you far enough that you can pop it into SPICE and see enough that you feel confident to go stick it on a board. And then,
I don't care about the in-depth theory of how the, you know, the millicapacitance works here and here. Like, you know,
right, because you're not... You're not writing the Spice engine, you're using it, right? I mean, like that, and that's, right. that's the difference, right? If you're, you know, if you're at the research level, then you might want to go do that kind of thing. And, but yeah, it's where you are in the chain, I think.
Yes. So there you go. But yeah.
So I got to go order that book for sure.
I think everyone should, like, if you don't have The Art of Electronics, I mean, I think it should be on your bookshelf. It should be on any practical electronics.
Yeah,
engineers,
and it's pricey.
Bookshelf.
Like people are talking
on
Twitter.
Cheap, but
yeah, it's like 120 bucks. Like, but like that's an investment, right? This is a book that'll stick with you for a long time. So
yes, and you'll keep it for the old one. You kept it for 25 years, you know, or 30 years since it came. Is it 25 years since the last one came out? 1989 was the last one.
It's like 25,
Yep.
Whew.
Exactly. And the old one is still relevant. Second edition is still relevant.
Hey, that got me my first job back into electronics. So,
right, it's funny. I just retweeted something this morning. Somebody posted a photo of The Art of Electronics saying it's already out of date by the time it was published. They showed a photo of it actually says where to go to get parts, Tandy Electronics.
Oh, sad.
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, Radio Shack. We don't really miss you. I saw there was an article about how they're supposed to be rebranding as a convenience store, Radio Shack, that is. I don't know if is Tandy's gone, right? Like, they're Tandy's no more?
Yes.
In Australia,
Tandy, no, I don't know if they're... Well, there might still be a couple of Tandy stores around selling mobile phones or something. I don't know. I haven't looked into it.
Yeah. But like apparently the ones that still exist, the Radio Shacks, are being reimagined as convenience stores. So you could just go in and, you know, pick up a charger off the wall. I don't know. I'm imagining
what's the difference? That's what Radio Shack always was. The electronics convenience store.
A bank of vending machines. Like that's what I'm imagining, but I don't think that's what it really would be.
Okay, so yeah, but they've always had pretty clueless people in there. So what's the difference between a clueless person or a machine? You know, that one of those Japanese vending machines that dispenses anything, you know?
Right.
Arduinos, yay! Here we go,
Well, there's a lot of those out there now. You can get, a lot of the hackerspaces have those too. They'll just buy an old vending machine and put Raspberry Pis in there and stuff like that.
What, really? Of course,
my buddy bought a Raspberry Pi out of the NYC resistor vending machine.
Oh, really? Oh, that's hilarious.
It's hard to find that many $5. Right. It only had a $5 bill, and five. So finding that many $5 bill things was kind of tough. But
that's neat. I like it.
Oh yeah, I mean, that could work someplace. Like, I mean, there's the Best Buy has that now too, right? It's not like you need a lot of customer interaction or retail interaction to do that stuff. But
but what's the difference? Like, what's the difference? Why don't you just order it online? You know, sure, you can go pick it up straight away, but Jesus, it's a limited market.
Well, that's the idea, and I think that's what they're talking about for Radio Shack too, is like the convenience side of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, hence the name, convenience store, you know.
Right, of course.
Because it's just there. But don't Amazon ship in like 6 hours now or something, same day?
Not yet, but they're getting there. It depends what city you're in. Like Cleveland doesn't have any of that stuff.
Okay.
So it's still got to go through a center. But Yeah, I think that's kind of the balance point for a lot of the technology we have these days too. Like, so we were talking about the board cutter and stuff like that, 3D printing, things like that. Like all of these things are basically... Can you, like, because there's 3D printing services too. You can go to Shapeways and order something and they'll send it to you in a couple days. I mean, like, it's and like laser cutting, all of these things. Are you willing to pay the capital investment for your own lab to have it immediately and then have all the overhead of the tasks you need to have with it as well, like cleaning and having, milling it and mills on hand
and learn how to figure out how to use it and getting up to speed.
Right.
And, I haven't used it for a year.
I was going to ask, have you used your 3D printer in a long time?
I've used it fairly recently. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So
cool.
I still know how it works.
Yeah.
But there was one point where since I last used it, they'd completely changed the software. Completely, right?
Right,
and
right.
I downloaded, because this machine didn't have it, right? So I downloaded, what? I'm going to go learn this new software. Like, Jesus.
Yeah,
Well,
and, like, I mean, there's some practical use. Like, so, like, there was a Hackaday article about these was it, pogo pins? Someone 3D printed pogo pins holders, right? Like, that's an right. awesome idea and something that you wouldn't, no one's going to injection mold that kind of thing. This is actually a really, really good use of a 3D printer. This isn't a case of, like, time. This is a case of, you know, like, ingenuity, I think, right? That's interesting.
Well, it's a case of need, isn't it?
But you needed need, something. Right. Yeah. And, like, but again, you could have someone, you could design this and send it off to Shapeways and they could send it back. And, you know, like, it is possible to do this kind of, and actually, you don't have to do Shapeways these days. There's actually a service, I forget what it's called. You can, there's a service you can do where, like, you can see who the closest 3D printer is to you. And then you can, they list the price right. and then you can, like, send it to them. And it's just like, you know, it's someone's house. It's just an unused, it's like an Airbnb for 3D printers.
Right.
Ah, dumb. Startups, huh? But yeah, there's...
I see this little 3D printed pogo pin thing. It's like a test holder. It's like a test pin.
Yeah, it's
holder.
A jig.
Right.
Yeah, it's a jig.
Yeah, yeah, it's a jig. They've actually gone to a lot of effort. There's a lot of separate parts on that.
This seems almost too complicated
for what it's, you know.
Ah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is...
It depends
how
proficient you are with the 3D tools and, you know, things like... I am not proficient, right? So it's a pain in the ass for me, right? But my employee, Dave, too, he's very proficient at it, right? So he can just do something and then whack it on the 3D printer. Bam, there it is.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah, so, and if you get good with like my buddy Marty is really good with a lot of tools like this, and he'll just do a board holder and stuff like that. He was just doing fixtures for his bench, and like that actually is another really good use of it. He showed me a couple of the holders where it's just, you know, just for like work holding and when you're soldering in weird positions or if you need to, you know, have card slots, that kind of weird thing. That was another really good use, I thought. And so, I mean, like that's how it goes, right? You find uses over time because it's kind of like a cognitive excess of, well, what do I use this thing for? And it's like, oh, well, I have a problem and I could throw a 3D printer at it. And this finally makes sense. So,
even if I had the 3D skills, I wouldn't have bothered with that. I would have just got my, pogo pin board, thrown it in the pan of ice and then just set the right angle and put it down and maybe prop it up with a book or something or, you know, like some sort of, you know, hack like that.
But that's for one. If you were doing 10, there's always a crossover point.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely a crossover point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At a certain point becomes a you know, when it's not DFM'd, right? If it's not designed for manufacturing, DFM.
Right.
Then you have to figure something else out. I mean, you used to do that all the time anyways with your...
Oh, yeah, that was a big part of my job, doing designing test jigs and all sorts of stuff for... Or production, and you'd put a lot of work into it, you know, because some of them were very complex and technical, and you know, because you had to run 10,000 boards through, you know, so it's important to have it right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, we're at the end of the show because we need to cut it short this week. Not short, but you know, actually an hour. Things I would love to hear in the comments this week. One, obviously, I'm feeling a bit of ennui this week. I'm feeling a little down about the electronics industry. So I'd love to hear what people are excited about. Like maybe I should be excited about something and I don't even know it yet. That would be great. And then other things for me are, I'd love to know what people are using micro-wise. I think that would actually really help me out because, you know, like I said, there's so many...
I don't think it will.
No, I know. It'll be everybody saying something like, I use this, I use that. But even if you just point me to resources, I don't care. I'll read everything. Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So instead of just picking one and getting on with business, you're going to dick around just reading everyone, reading everything for the next month.
I'm not on that I'm not on that board yet. So.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's a big deal, right? That's a big decision point. You know, micros, like, if better or worse, that's a big part of any project these days. So that's, Dave, do you want them to say anything to you in the comments? I think we should do this, you know, too, like prompt them instead of, no, you didn't tell us anything this week.
Ah, people will call me idiot for losing my
stuffs
again. Go ahead. I don't care.
Yeah.
Hey, somebody suggested should we do an AMA with episodes, with answers as an episode?
Yeah, we can. I mean, we've... 244 episodes in, you've heard a lot of our stories, but you got questions. So here's the thing. you can always ask these questions on the subreddit like that. Just do a text post there. Just hit submit. What is it? Submit a new text post to the Amp Hour subreddit.
so that we never get around to it.
Right. Well, if that doesn't work, there is an email button on theamphour.com. There's that goes to both of us. So shoot it, and I'll actually post it to the subreddit. So
this is something someone complained about the other week, and that apparently we used to do shows where we went through the list a bit more religiously.
Yeah.
You know, we went through the list. You know, we did an episode based on the list, and whereas now we sort of take a more laissez-faire approach. And
we should go look at the old list because the old list was like, it was like six items, and we had to talk about everything. We talked about the list because that's all there was. It wasn't public. And also, I was thinking about the other day because of this Y Combinator thing. They have the Hacker News. It's like Reddit. Remember when we used to have that list and it used to always crash? And do you remember that thing? No.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, it used to be like our subreddit was.
Right.
Ah, the good old days.
Yeah, good old days. Jeez.
Yeah.
When I was a boy.
Yep. All right, man. Well, I can't wait to hear more about your Dave as a Manager project. This is very exciting for me.
it's just another product that's been designed and made by a big company.
How's it? What's happening? Yeah.
Anyway, it's gonna take a long time.
Talk about your TPS reports.
Yeah, right.
I'm mostly excited about making Office Space jokes. So.
Yeah. I love Office Space. I'm gonna have to go watch it again.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't watched it for a while. And yeah, because I used to be in that sort of. Yep. When you work for the man, you'll really appreciate Office Space. Yeah, it's great.
All right, man. All right, the man. We'll talk to you next week.
Cool. Bye.
This week on the Amp Hour, Dave plays the man. Yeah, hi. Hi, Peter. We're starting at the normal time today, at 9 o'clock. It's not a half day or anything.